Happy Tuesday, everyone. This is Pam Stack. I'm your host for Authors on the Air. It is an unusual night for me to be on, but I have a most unusual and interesting best-selling author with me. I'm going to introduce you to A.R. Shaw, who writes post-apocalyptic and dystopian crime fiction. She so far exceeds the crowd. You're going to be fascinated when you hear what she has to say. Stay with me. Welcome back to Authors on the Air. January is Female Crime Fiction Writers Month. We're really celebrating almost every genre that I can find, where there's a mystery, a thriller, a killer, a chiller. And tonight, you've not ever read anything quite like A.R. Shaw's books. Annette writes in her overall series is called Graham's Resolution. She is amazing. Almost without question, she's got 5-star reviews on almost every single review, and they are numbered in the hundreds. She is quite unusual, but the most important thing to me is that she served in the Air Force, and for that, the Air Force Reserves. She was a radio operator, and for that, I thank Miss Annette Shaw. A.R. Shaw, welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, thank you for having me.
We had a chance to speak briefly when Steve Conkley released the Kindle World's Perseid Collapse series, and you wrote a book in that series. And you were the only woman out of the original 12 who submitted novellas. And so the guys were really loud, and they kind of, like, talked over you, and I thought, what a bunch of bums, you know? I mean, I love Steve Conkley's work. I really do. But your books stand so far ahead on their own. Thank you so much for agreeing to be here privately without any of the guys and talking to me about them. Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you very much.
How in the world?
They're great guys.
Did this? They really are great guys. But how in the world did this Texas girl who lives in Idaho, who was an Air Force Reserve radio operator, start writing in post-apocalyptic and dystopian, and walk away with a Kirkus favorable review? I mean, a review that just kicked ass. How did this happen?
I don't know. I don't know. I've always been drawn. I've always been drawn to the survival aspect of the what do you call it? The post-apocalyptic genre, but life itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always been drawn
mm-hmm.
to difficult situations and how you will survive them. I do watch, you know, all the crazy TV shows, the zombie shows, but not for the zombies. I watch them to see how people will survive those different scenarios. It's something that has always appealed to me. And so, I used to read different books, but the one thing that was always the same was that whoever the protagonist was, he was already skilled. You know, he was ex-military. He was a super capable guy. And whenever I started Graham's Resolution, I really wanted a guy who did not have a clue what he was doing. That's what I was looking for, a human being. And I picked a human being and put him in that situation. And just from my perspective, that's how Graham's Resolution came to be. And it was pretty successful. I'm still working in that world, too.
So. Let's have you tell a little bit about the first book, because I think the China pandemic sets everything up for the rest of the series and introduces who these characters are. And it's really important for listeners to know who they are and what to expect. So can you tell us about the book, please?
Sure. The China Pandemic, it's the first book in the Graham's Resolution series, and Graham is the main character. And he is he's just a regular guy. He is set in Seattle. I was living in Washington State at the time. So he's set in Seattle. He's a math professor at UW there. And this crazy thing happens. We've all heard of the bird flu. So it's based on this catalyst. I have this one thing that I try to do is always come up with a unique catalyst for the end of the world. So for Graham's resolution, it was a weaponized bird flu. And so I start with this poor guy who is having to bury his family because this has happened so quickly. I try to go for the real human element, like having to bury a pregnant dead wife, having to bury your father, having to put dirt on your father's face. I just really tried to go for the real human side of things. And then the second major thing that happens in this story is a Korean child named Bang, and a mother. Very few people in this series are immune to this virus, to this weaponized virus. Mm-hmm. I had to learn how to make the virus. I had to talk with the CDC. I had to learn how you make a vaccine. There's a ton of research that goes into novels like this. And so so Bang is this child. He's 5 years old, and his mother is Korean, and she has the virus. What do you do with a five-year-old child when you know you're dying and everyone's dying around you? So that was, as a mom, that was something I really thought about. And she had to find survivors being ill and knowing that she's dying, you know, and who do you take your child's life, or do you give him to a survivor and hope that he survives? That's a tough question for a mom. So that's,
I would imagine.
That was,
I think it's a tough question for humanity. So you're
that's
right.
What
you
I went
hit
for.
It just right. I want to go back even further before the book, because you had an interest in the genre, and you had an interest in the genre in different formats with reading and movies and television and everything else. What compelled you to write? Have you always wanted to be a writer? I don't know about your background.
I've always written. I was a voracious reader as a child and still am. I was kind of a quiet kid. I wrote for a long time, had, you know, my own family and my own children, and then decided to start publishing once they started heading off to college. So I pretty much just was a stay-home mom with them until they started leaving the house. And then it's kind of like, well, what do you do now? You know? So I started publishing my writing, started publishing some of my books. That's pretty much my background. But before that,
swimmingly
It's
gone swimmingly well. You've hit post-apoc and dystopian bestseller on Amazon after the first book. So congratulations.
That was surprising.
That is, not surprising. Wonderful. Wonderful.
Thank you.
I think it's great.
Thank you.
So here's what I want to do before we go any further. I want to tell everyone the call-in number. Write it down. This is important. There's a method to my madness. Well, kind of, sort of. 347-633-9609. When I open up the phone lines, the first person, maybe two, who call in are going to get A.R. Shaw's first book. In Graham's Resolution, and that's called The China Pandemic. That's going to kick you off for the rest of the series. Now, if you don't want to start there, you can go to Kindle Worlds, because you have written a couple entries in Kindle Worlds, too. You wrote for Perseid Collapse, and you wrote Wayward
Blake
Pines,
Crouch's
too,
Wayward
right?
Pines. Yeah.
Blake Crouch.
I did. Yeah.
Did you enjoy doing those? Taking.
I did.
Mean, I've read your
yeah,
one
it was fun.
From Percy to Collapse. Yeah.
Right. There's a Kubrick series, novella series for the Percy at Collapse for Stephen Conkley, and then
right.
there's one book, Kate's Redemption, for Blake Crouch's Wayward Pines series, which I had great fun doing.
Wow, how fun is that? Do you have another book out by any chance?
I do. I have a new series out. Oh, I do. So I have a book called The French Wardrobe, and that book mm-hmm. is kind of a crime fiction mystery sort of book. I think it's a great story. It's also set in Washington State. It's about it's kind of a mashup, to be honest. So it's a standalone, and it's not post-apocalyptic. It's about a family. The father's a lawyer, and lawyers get harassed quite a bit by crazy clients. So I kind of took that one step further, and it ended up being where a client was basically stalking this husband for years and threatening him. And he decided to let this go. He decided he was not going to deal with this anymore. He wasn't going to let it affect his life. But it did affect his life, tragically. And the wife, years later, ends up dealing with this after his death. So not to give the whole thing away, but it was somewhat of a vigilante justice type of thing. What I did there was I took what a woman would do as opposed to what a man would do. What a mother and wife would do to protect her family is totally different from what a father and husband would do. So that was what I did with that particular book. It is a standalone.
It kind of sounds like that Glenn Close, Michael Douglas film from a long time ago.
Somewhat. Yes, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I never saw it because it creeped me out, but you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
She was the stalker.
Yeah.
And all. He had a brief fling with her or something,
Right.
Ugh.
And I can't remember.
That stuff scares me. You know, people that are kooky like that scare me. So.
Yeah.
But you also are now starting a new series called Surrender the Sun.
Right.
And you are releasing,
yes.
You've released one book already. You released Bishop's Honor, which is the first one, correct?
Correct,
different than...
This is totally different than Graham's Resolution. With this series, I took... it's weird how things happen. So what I did was I needed a new catalyst, and I always look for something that no one else has done. And I found this crazy idea of an ice age. And I researched that a little bit farther, and I found something called the Maunder Minimum. Now, this was back in July last year when I was sort of deciding what this catalyst would be. It was probably June, May, June. And then I published the book in September. So it's based on the Maunder Minimum, which is the lack of sunspot activity causing a mini ice age on Earth. This is actually a true phenomena. It's happened in 1645. It caused a great famine. It was during the time that Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, how dark it was, how bleak. Yeah, it was during that time. There was very few harvests. They called it the year without a summer. It was a lot of famine. It was a really terrible time in our history. And this happens in a cycle, apparently, every now and then. So after I published it in September, then this Russian scientist comes out and she announces that we are heading into a Maunder Minimum again. So that kind of freaked me out a little.
Really?
Yeah, apparently.
Hello? Yeah. That is
kind of scary. So that is what Surrender the Sun series is.
I have the first book, which I haven't read yet. I will admit, you know that my to be read pile is about 1,000 books high.
Oh,
but your second book
mine,
is due to release in March. So at the end of March.
Yes, the end of March.
Congratulations!
Mm-hmm.
You have received once again glowing reader reviews and blurbs from other authors who keep, you know, singing your praises, and that is just terrific. I'm so happy for you. Now,
thank you.
I want people to understand that when in dystopian or post-apoc, there is crime happening. And can you tell people why? You have to explain why, because, you know, people are saying, well, isn't that kind of science fiction-y? And, you know, and it's, yes, it can be.
Anytime you put humanity in a difficult situation, you're going to end up with crime. You know, there's the haves and the have-nots, or what's perceived to be so. Anytime you starve a child, you're going to have parents who will do anything to feed them.
Absolutely.
Or if they're sick. And so, yes, it's definitely crime. If they're sick, oh, my goodness, yeah. Yeah, you're going to have crime. You're going to have murder. You're going to have theft. That's human nature.
There's opportunists, too, whether it's parents and children, but there are always opportunists, you know, and the stronger over the weaker. And society, unfortunately, has not revealed itself to be evolved enough to react in a compassionate and empathetic way during a disaster.
No. Yeah. And anytime you have a disaster.
Small disasters like maybe hurricanes, but still you do have
even then,
people who price gouge
very
and looters.
Quickly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Right.
Like Katrina did. So we know that.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, a lot of people, I think, wrongly expect that the government can correct these things, but you and I know that's not true, because the government is made up of people who have families and who have placed their family before their job.
Right.
Right.
That is true. Yeah. 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 And people have to, you have to take care of yourself. I mean, you do. You have to take care of yourself and your family, and you have to be logical about things. Hurricanes happen. You have to be prepared for those things.
Absolutely.
Ahead of time. You know.
Okay, so I'm going to open up the phone lines right now. The number is 347-633-9609. Give a call in. Say hi to A.R. Shaw. Let's talk about dystopian and post-apocalyptic and what you like to read. And give us a ring. And, I'll be glad to give away a couple books. Out of the blue, you decide to self-publish these books. But your writing is so spectacular that you've gotten rave reviews from readers and reviewers alike. So you had to learn the craft of writing somehow. How did that come to you? How did you study it? What did you do? So I want to know, I guess, about your learning process to become a published writer.
Well, I went to college, and I learned to write there. I also, I've read a lot of books about the craft. Certainly, gosh, I can't even name them right now. There's several. There was one particular who I... You know, it's always that thing that rules are made to be broken. So you certainly take them and you apply them, but then you break them as well. Stephen King has a great book on writing out. But I was going to say that actually the China Pandemic is also published in Germany by a German publisher, Lucifer Verlag.
I saw that.
And it's doing great there, which is amazing. They really love post-apocalyptic books. It was actually number one for quite a while in post-apoc in Germany.
Wow.
So,
that
was crazy.
They do like post-apoc, as a matter of fact. I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking about my friends who publish over there as well. Great book market, too, isn't it?
It's growing there. And so they've picked up the rest of the series
already.
And they're publishing
that as well. The Frankfurt Book Festival is one of the biggest in the world, and it's just amazing.
And they're a great publisher. They really push it. I got a review from someone in Australia who read the German translation, and she wants the rest of the series right now. And I think that they just have a few translators there. And so I just passed that email along to him and hoping that, they'll get them done. It's, that's kind of cool to get your fan mail and requests and demands for more books. It's a great feeling to
have.
Are
your books available in audio by any chance?
Yes, they are. The Graham's Resolution is available in audio, and the first book, Surrender the Sun, Kevin Pierce is a great audio guy, and he finished that one. He does a lot of the post-apocalyptic books. He's pretty sought after. So Kevin Pierce did Surrender the Sun, and he's awaiting the next book as well.
How does it feel to hear a voice not your own reading your words?
You know, it's funny. I was asked a few times why I didn't voice it over, but I just, when I write, I try not to write as a female or as a male.
Right.
I just try to write
right.
the story.
So
to me, I thought that the story wasn't really a female voice. I felt like it needed to be a male voice. And so that, you know, it's kind of difficult. You have to find the right voice. Kevin just has,
absolutely.
He has the right voice for post-apoc period. I mean, he just does. He's probably the most sought after audio guy in this business for post-apocalyptic.
I'm going to have to start listening to audiobooks because everyone's talking about how great they are.
They're huge.
I don't care about the format. It's the content that matters to me. Let's take a call and see who's
mm-hmm.
checking in with us.
Sure.
From area code, let's see if I can get this to hook up. The internet's a little slow here where I am in Southwest Florida, so it's going to think about it. If you're waiting, area code 414, we're trying to get you hooked into the studio. Don't go away. As soon as you pop up, I'm going to go ahead and take your call. In the meantime, I had a nice conversation with one of my authors last night about audiobooks, and she said she loves them. She likes to have an audiobook on when she's cleaning or when she's cooking
sure.
and all.
Yeah.
And I always am afraid that it's going to become ambient sound and I'll start thinking about other things. But
turn it out.
I guess if the story is well told and the narrator particularly is doing a good job, then that doesn't
happen. I have a
lot
of truck drivers and commuters who ask for them.
Yeah.
They constantly say, when is this coming out in audio? They'll wait for it. Yeah, so
I have another author friend who actually started his career because he listened to audiobooks on his commute. He and his wife
mm-hmm.
listened to audiobooks on his commute to work, and he said, you know, I can write a better book than that. That's not really the way it would happen or what. He's in law enforcement. And
that
isn't how it's done. And so it wasn't, he didn't have a problem with the narrator, he had a problem with the storyline, and so he actually wrote some really good novels, some really good crime fiction. They're a very interesting book, so I'm really going to have to try it. I go back and forth from the west coast of Florida to the east coast because my family
mm-hmm.
is over there and a lot of friends because I'm from Miami, so I should really do an audiobook one of these days. Maybe I'll do yours with this
sure.
gentleman. Caller in 414, please hang up and try calling back again. I can't get a connection on you. I'm not sure exactly why, what's happening. But if you call back, I promise I'm going to try to go ahead and get you in the studio. But call back, okay? Thank you. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. The switchboard is not cooperating with me tonight. And you got in fine, but, you know, who knows? It's one of those woo-woo mm-hmm. nights, I suppose. It didn't happen on the Friday the 13th. It just happens on other days. It's a Tuesday. I'm not supposed to be on the radio. You're special.
Thank you.
So when you are home, do you read post-apocalypse and dystopian, or do you read other genres as well?
I read across the board. I do. I'm reading a book I've never, you know, I like to go old and new. So I read the classics and then I'll read something current. So right now I'm reading 1984 by George Orwell. I had not, I've never read it. So
really?
Yeah. I have never come across it before. I've never read it. So that's what I'm reading now. I always read Lucifer's Hammer and A Last Babylon probably once a year just to try to, those are the classic dystopian books to me.
Right.
Anne Rand's books. Yeah, I read, I definitely read a lot of hers. Margaret Atwood is a favorite. I've read a new author. He's not a new author, but he's a friend, but his new release, Patriot Deception by Ross Elder. Uh-huh. That's a good book.
Oh yeah,
Ross. It's a new one.
Absolutely.
And it's really great.
Let's see that. Area code 414, are you on the line with us?
I am.
Oh, good. Who's this?
This is Patrick O'Donnell.
Hi, Patrick. I'm sorry that I had a hard time connecting you to the studio, and I looked up and, a microphone's on. You're live with Amanda Shaw, so please talk.
Well, nice hearing
you. Hi, Patrick
guys.
Is a fellow author, yeah.
Well, welcome
back
to the air, Patrick.
Well, thank you. It's funny you're talking about audiobooks because I was listening to the audiobook on my way home from work today.
Oh, my
Which
God.
One? Surrender the Sun?
Yes. Yes. That's the one I'm listening to right now. I'm about halfway through.
Do you normally listen to audiobooks, Patrick?
I do because I have a long commute back and forth to work. So it's either audiobooks or podcasts.
How does it change do you ever have a chance, first of all, to sit down and actually read a book or read on an e-reader?
Yes, in the evening I do.
Okay. So what have you noticed is the difference between reading it and listening to a book? I maintain that hearing a book stimulates a different part of your brain, and I think that you take in the information in a different way. Not bad or good. I think it's just different. What do you find?
Well, I think you're right, because when you're listening to an audiobook, it gets to you differently. When I'm reading either a Kindle or a paperback, I think you use more imagination. But in an audiobook, it's, like you said, you use a different side of your brain, probably. But it's more convenience than anything else. I'm not a fast reader. Never have been. So, and I want, it's almost like instant gratification.
Do you ever get distracted and have to backtrack in your audiobook?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have that, like, it's probably like a 5-second rewind you can hit. So, if something's popping up or you're going through a drive-thru or whatever, I either pause it or I just rewind it a couple of times.
Now, Patrick, he's one of my police author friends. So he's a great resource for me at times.
Police officer or both? Okay.
He's both.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad that you're on the radio with us. Tell us about your book while you're on. And then let me send you, since you're the first caller, and probably going to be the last, it looks like I'm still having problems connecting, but I will send you another book, whether you want an audio book or an e-book or I guess you're not in paper, but I'll send you another one of Vinette's books if you just send me a PM with your email address.
Sure, I could do that.
So tell us about your books first, so we know what you write, and then ask questions away as much as you want.
Okay. Well, first off, I just want to say thank you to AR. She's been very, very helpful. I'm a rookie.
Sure.
I only have one fiction book, and I had two self-help books that I wrote under pen names. Before I was a police officer, I sold cars, I bartended, I managed restaurants, I did all kinds of stuff.
Interesting.
So
all stuff you can draw from.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the best thing you can draw from all of those experiences and create wonderful characters and have all kinds of stories. As a bartender alone and as a car salesman, you've probably heard it all between those two professions alone.
Yeah. But, it's so funny because, somebody's like, I never thought I'd write a book. And it's like, yeah, you should write a book about this. And I'm like, okay, I'll give it a whirl. So I did. And did fairly well. And then a good friend of mine was doing his dissertation for his PhD, and he was just sick of the dry writing that he had to do. So he wrote a post-apocalyptic book. And I'm like, and he did really well. That was in 2014. It was Lights Out in America's Dairyland. And it was, you know, an EMP type book. So I'm like, yeah,
right?
That's kind of cool. I read some of this stuff. So I wrote my book. It's called Mad City, book one of the of the Sean Walsh post-apocalyptic series.
Mad City?
Mad City.
Okay.
Yeah. I recently read and reviewed it. It's really good.
Thank you for that. And like I, you know,
it's
kind of neat. It's really neat because the indie community is so nice to like new people like me. Yeah, I'm doing everything trial and error. You know, I'm making mistakes. I'm trying to figure stuff out. And these guys, all you have to do is just ask them. AR is awesome.
Yeah, the writing community is amazing anyway. There's no doubt about that. I have your book pulled up on Amazon, and right below you is a friend of mine, Boyd Craven, who wrote Double Dog, the post-apocalyptic thriller.
Yeah.
Boyd is
he's
awesome.
A great guy.
I tell you what.
He's awesome.
He's the first person
we
I reached out to when I was writing this book. I reached out to him, and I'm sure I bugged the heck out of him, but I was asking
he doesn't mind. Boyd and I met in Indy this past month. We were there for a survival expo, and he ended up driving me to the airport. He's hilarious. No, but we had a great time.
He's a great guy.
We all have our mentors. Oh, he is. And, he's a wonderful guy. And
you know, all of you who write are really important in my life, personally, not just because I do a radio show because, personally, I'm impacted by books so much. I read, unlike you, Patrick, I read 400 books a year because I am a very fast reader and I don't have a television. So I'm more interested in reading. And then when I started doing this, I did it on a lark as a co-host with someone. We interviewed once a month or once every other week or something. And so I enjoyed it so much because I've always been a fangirl of writers that I continued the show. I took over this show. And so now I've done over 1,000 author interviews. But it's so much fun to do this.
I was going to say the other indie female post-apocalyptic author that I know who's really great is Kate Morris. I also met her with Boyd in Indy. She's just phenomenal, Kate Morris. So there is more than
good.
One female out there.
There's just not a lot of you. So
no,
Patrick, what did you learn from Annette?
She was,
okay, you're on the spot.
Yeah, I know I am. Oh, my gosh. You know, I learned a lot.
I'm going to click on and buy both. I'm going to buy your book right now, and I'm going to buy Boyd's book because I haven't read this one either. And I love post-apocalyptic. So are
Boyd's,
now getting a
and
sale.
And also
Boyd's
get Ross Elder's. Ross Elder's
yes.
Patriot Deception.
I
yeah,
think I
was,
have.
It's really
I
good.
Think
I think you're
Ross
reading that one now, aren't you? Yeah.
I was reading
yeah, I
that
think I have
actually
Ross.
This morning.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about, I know what you're saying about the other writers. The tribe is very close-knit. And,
yes, it is.
And writers have been kind enough to include me in their little tribe. And maybe it's because I know so many of you. I'm not really sure, but I do try to give everybody a chance to come on the radio. But what I want to know from you, Patrick, is what have you learned from the authors that you've spoken to? What kind of help have they given you?
Well, it's been everything from nuts and bolts to inspiration. You know, like with Boyd, I had my last book, I was using a cover designer from Prague that I heard on a different podcast. It was actually the girlfriend of the guy who does Rocking Self-Publishing. What's his name? It's a great podcast. I like it. And he's always pitching his girlfriend's like cover design business. And I used her for one project. And this one that Mad City, I wanted something totally different. And I had a vision in my head what I wanted. And I told Boyd, and Boyd is like, oh, I'll give you the name and number of my girl. I'm like, oh, okay. I wasn't even looking for it. And he's just, here you go. I'm like, how cool is that?
Well, you know what it is? This is my feeling. I don't know. And that you tell me. I think that if you elevate one, you elevate all. If you support
I think it's a
one,
chain
you
reaction,
all.
You know? Yeah,
yes.
It is. It's a chain reaction. Like my
you
mentor
uplift your
is,
profession. Yes.
Right, right.
You
my mentor
the
is,
entire profession.
Has always
yes.
been Stephen Conkley. He's been great.
Yeah.
Tom Abrams. We all sort of work together.
Yeah.
And then
I
whenever they
do.
Help you and they're doing well, then, you know, you help others who were coming up behind you. And that's pretty, I mean, they're all my brothers. You know, it's amazing. If I have any issues, problems,
I understand.
Anything
you know,
like that,
I
just have
to
reach
meet
out.
Steve too. I had a chance to meet Steve.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
Boucher
His wife
in
is
North
lovely.
Carolina, I think.
Boucher
yeah.
Khan,
right. Yeah.
I met him last year there. Yeah.
And
in
well,
Indy. He came up in Indy as well. Yeah.
Well, in AR, I was asking her, I was just telling her something, I think, about like a mailing list or something. And she just, like, automatically went into, well, you need to do this, and, you know, this service here is very cheap, you know, blah,
you
blah, blah.
Right.
And, like,
yeah.
you know, it's just so cool how, like I said, I'm a newbie. I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, I'm just kind of starting out.
But you know what? You're going to take some newbie. Now you're not a newbie anymore. Are you writing your next book, Patrick?
Oh, yeah. I've already started it. I want to make, you know, this is going to be a series. What my end game is, I can retire from law enforcement in 3 years. I'm hoping I can make enough money doing this where, you know, it'd be a nice little supplemental and I can live wherever I want. That's my big thing.
Sure.
But let me tell you something. With success and with publishing comes great responsibility for you to now mentor a newbie since you are no longer the newbie yourself. You've got your book out and you're writing your second one and you have your path kind of ahead for you. Who knows what twists and turns it'll take, but so the mantle now falls to you to be the next mentor. And it's a wonderful thing. You know, it's a great thing. Which is why I always love having people come on and play host when I can just sit back and listen. You know, it's a ton of fun that way. I'm so glad that you called in tonight and congratulations on your debut novel. I will absolutely
read and
review for you. And good luck with the next book coming out. Did you have any questions or comments that you wanted for A.R. Shaw right now?
Yeah, I have a couple. One comment, and Boyd kind of turned me on to this group. It's called Isle of Sky Post-Apocalyptic Group. It's on Facebook.
Isle of Sky. Yeah.
Yes.
It's in Scotland, and it's run by William Beatty.
And
what's the question?
All right,
cool
you guys,
Boyd
is on the other line, so let me see if I can connect him into the studio, too.
Boyd?
Hit or miss with whether or not I get him into the studio,
but
let me he's messaging me, so I'm going to tell him that you
Patrick,
that I'm trying to get
question?
Him in there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you, Boyd.
So I'm
Boyd.
Boyd Craven. My name backwards 3 times. How you guys doing?
Hey, you.
Great.
Hey,
Boyd's on the line with us. There you go. Hey, Boyd. I just bought
How's
your
it
book.
Going?
Your,
Thank you.
Your book is right
now,
after Patrick, so I just went and clicked on it and bought that one too. Because, you know, I never know what's gonna what you're doing. I never know what you're writing. So I saw it and I said, oh, that's Boyd. That's my friend. Boyd and I kind of have a really interesting relationship. So we were supposed to meet and then it didn't work out. So he goes
you
to my place to this one seminar
surgery.
Every year. I was having surgery,
right?
Oh,
that's right, yeah.
So,
yeah, you
so
were having
now
your
Boyd goes,
hip surgery, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And so now Boyd goes to the conference that I was supposed to go to. He's my stand-in all the time now. No, right?
Definitely. Yes.
And they love you there, by the way. You're one of
Do
the
they?
Few male authors that goes. Yes, you have great Oh, listen, they like you. Trust me. So we're talking post-apoc books, and I was saying, oh, you know, this was not your first choice, Boyd, to write. And then I think we went back and forth on the phone a whole bunch of times about what you should be writing and what you shouldn't be writing, didn't we? We had some
definitely
really great conversations.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I went from
really
romance to post-apoc.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
So it's interesting the way it's turned, and it's working out really good for you, isn't it? It's working out really
it is.
Well
and
for
I,
you.
And I must say it's been really awesome to talk to and meet a lot of the authors in the genre. You know, I got to meet AR here in Indy a couple months ago. Was it November, December?
Was it November? I think. Yeah,
I know. And I got to meet, like, the big heavyweights in post-APOC. And
yeah,
it was just
Stephen
really
Conkley,
humbling,
Kate
and
Morris.
I really loved it.
Lori.
I know. You?
Yeah. Ross Elder. Yeah, we were all there. It was fun.
I know.
We had a great time. And
I couldn't go.
You know, because
so
you work
bummed.
Alone. Yeah. You work alone all the time. Being a writer is a very lonely business. And occasionally you have these opportunities to go somewhere. Like Ian Graham and I went to BoucherCon, and we hung out together in New Orleans for a week. It was great fun. Met Steve Conkley and his wife there. Yeah, he is wonderful. So we had a great time. So every now and then you get to meet these other authors and hang out and talk to fans. You get to meet fans that you've talked to a few times, and I get to ask you, you know, questions, and yeah, it's really awesome to be able to do that. We all ended up going. Well, let's see, Burt Walker was there. We got to go and hang out at a restaurant at some point. That was fun. So it was. Yeah.
Well, I will tell you, just from the reader standpoint. So, and because I love books so much, so, and I told you already, I don't own a television. So anybody who writes a book is my celebrity. So I'm the biggest fangirl, even though I go to so many conferences and I've been really blessed to meet a lot of authors. But you guys have kind of allowed me by default to be in the tribe, so I appreciate that. And I just want to share that again, that how much it means to me.
Oh, sure.
But
we love you.
But you thank you. You're so kind to me, really. So you three, though, write in such an interesting genre in post-apoc and dystopian, because it's not an overly populated subgenre of crime fiction or fantasy or science fiction. It is a really coming unto its own in the past few years. Do you think
it's growing.
Shows like, you know, the what's Walking Dead and, you know, all those kind of things, do they come after the books, or did they spur on this great movement for post-apocalyptic and dystopian? Boyd, what do you think?
Well, the living, what was it? Night of the Living Dead, the original. I think that really kind of started off the zombie apoc, you know, the old Romero films and, you know. But, I mean, beyond that, I mean, you also had stuff like Red Dawn that came out, you know, as a movie, The Wolverines.
That was in the 80s,
Yeah. So, I mean, it's always been there in the background, but it's never really been mainstream. I mean, I think Y2K, at least for me, is what made things kind of look and feel real. I mean, I was, you know, I'm a Gen X guy. So for me, I was, you know, I remember the air raid drills. I remember the, you know, the fallout drills and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
And that was kind of the earliest kind of thing I can remember. And, you know, they don't do that now. So, I mean, things kind of shifted, but it's now kind of coming back into, you know, at least fiction. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think
Patrick,
we'll come up with
about
the scenarios people fear. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think, you know, like the Will Smith movie, what was that, I Am Legend?
Oh, yeah.
That was great. Yes.
The book was totally different,
and,
but the music, I mean, the movie was great. Yeah.
Yep. But, you know, as far as, like, you know, Walking Dead, everybody at work talks about it the next day. And, you know, it's, you know, it's guys, it's girls, it's, you know, everybody. So all that does
is, you know, the interesting thing about that particular television show is there's another show in the network that I'm in called Thorn and Cross, Haunted Nights Live. And though people from that show, the writers and all, who do the book and who do the script writing and everything, are always on their show. So for some reason, I think post-apoc and dystopian, particularly if it has zombies or, you know, mutated whatevers, end up in the horror genre. Yeah, horror and supernatural. So they have a lot of that stuff over there. And those hosts are also, they're horror authors. They're best-selling horror authors. Well, everybody in the network is an author except for me. But, you know, but I have the most fun, though, and I have the coolest guests. But so
I was going to say, you have the most fun because you get to like talk to everyone.
Everyone. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true. Boy, by the way, how's the baby? The baby's a year old now, right?
Yeah, he's a little over a year old. He's big.
God. Well, he was a bruiser when he was born, for crying out loud. Shame on you, your poor wife. My God.
Well,
okay,
I don't know if you saw the pictures from the IndyCon, but comparing, you know, I'm not a very tall guy, but when you stand me next to AR,
you're a giant,
the baby's
right?
Probably going to be two or three times taller than me, so.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God.
He's just, you know, I'm kind of broad, and the baby's going to be broad and tall. So, I mean, football scholarship, I
recessive
hope, is in
genes.
His work someday.
There you go. Recessive genes someplace that he's going to be tall like that. Okay, so, Patrick, where can, if listeners want to find you other than on Amazon, do you have a website or a Facebook page or anything?
Right now, just a Facebook page. It's the Sean Walsh post-apocalyptic Facebook page.
Sean Walsh is what it's called? Okay. You're going to send me a PM. You can find me on Facebook at the number 4, Pam Stack, or just ask AR and she'll tell you how to find me. And I'm going to send you your choice of book of hers, or if you want Boyd's book, that's fine. But, you know, Authors on the Air is going to gift you with a book, okay?
Cool. That sounds great.
All right. All right, and go buy your stuff. Go buy Patrick's stuff, okay? And thanks for calling in, Patrick. I'm really glad I had a chance to meet you. Thank you very much.
And thank you, AR, and thank you, Boyd. Both of you guys have been
a big
help.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Hey, one
okay,
thing I
Boyd.
Wanted to mention.
Yes.
Just a second, Pam. There's one thing I wanted to mention. There is another survival show coming up in April, and it's in Salt Lake City, and the host for that one is Hoff, G. Michael Hoff. We're all meeting there.
Oh, yes, he's really good. Okay,
yeah,
we have another call coming.
So.
Yes, I've seen his stuff, yes. I've seen the podcast, I've seen everything that's going on. I'm trying to hook up whoever 770 is. As soon as it pops up, you're on the show. We're just having a hard time connecting. Boyd Craven, tell everyone where we can find you on the webs, please.
Well, you can find me on Amazon or boydcraven.com. But I was calling in.
And you're on Facebook all the time. You're really good about
it. I am, but I was calling in to ask AR when her next book's coming out, because I'm totally a fanboy. So.
Okay, March
28th. Sorry, I hate that. What's that?
The end of March. There's a pre-sale out
for
it.
I gotta wait that long?
Yeah, I'm sorry,
March 28th. Yeah.
But you can beta read for me. Hey.
Definitely.
Hey,
no,
listen,
I would love to.
I'll beta read anytime you want. Okay, so here's the thing. Because you called in, and because I know you have a family to support, pick out a book, either Patrick's or AR's, or and whichever one you want, I'll send you in whatever in the format, either an ebook or an audiobook, whichever you want. But send me either email me or PM me, okay? And I'll be glad to go ahead and
it'll
send
probably,
you a book.
I'll probably say AR's new book, because I got all of her old ones, and I've already got Patrick's.
Okay, I can't.
So when
gift,
AR publishes her new
book. I can't gift
you, thank you.
A pre-order.
A pre-sale.
Void, but I can right, but I can
can
send you the card for it. I'll send you a gift card for it, okay?
No problem. Yeah, I'll definitely.
I'm glad you called in.
Thank you, Boyd.
No problem.
Thanks, Boyd. Okay, have a good one. Take care of that baby.
You too. All right, bye-bye.
Bye. So I'm still trying really hard to get 770, area code 770 hooked up. I don't know if it's going to work or not. You know, I just had a really bad connection tonight. I'm really sorry.
That's okay.
Tell everybody where to find you on the internet, please.
Oh, it's easy. AuthorARShaw.com. And there's links there to my Twitter, I'm not super big on Twitter. I don't know. But I am on Facebook. I'm pretty active on Facebook.
You are.
I also have, and you can friend me. Yeah, you can friend me on there. It's my author's Facebook page. I don't have a personal life, so I just use that.
You were tweeting tonight. I saw so that's good. You do.
Did you tweet? I might have. Oh yeah, I do. Like if I blog
something,
then it automatically tweets out. Yeah, I do.
All right. Let me try this. Hi, 770. You're live. Who's this?
Hello, ladies. This is Randy Powers. How are we doing this evening?
Hi, Randy.
Well, I had a feeling it was you. Hi, Randy. How are you? Another wonderful author and my colleague in the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. This is Randy Powers, the host of Practical Prepping, period. He is one of, I think, the experts on how to really be prepared for the post-apocalyptic things that are going to happen in this country. I really believe that. Go ahead, Randy. The microphone is yours for now.
Well, I've enjoyed the conversation this evening. You guys have touched on so much. I tried to make some notes. But, AR, I could not believe that you hadn't read 1984. And I wanted to give you like a high five.
Yeah.
I wanted to give you a high five and just say, good on it. I hope you enjoy it. I read it, reread it just a few months ago, and it reaffirmed for me that it is, without a doubt, the saddest book I've ever read. And
great. That's all I need.
it's extremely powerful. So I hope you enjoy the read. I did, like, when you were ticking off the other classics that you listen to, that you read, one of those are on my shelf, you know, and I feel the exact same way. So if the listeners haven't read
Fahrenheit
them, I strongly
451.
Suggest.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love the classics.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're all great.
So
the
other reason I was calling in was to give you just an audio just to tell our listeners, I recently did a book review for your latest effort, and I have read The China Pandemic, and I just wanted to tell everybody, reaffirm my book review and say, if you haven't read this book, take a chance on it. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you.
If you're into
I don't think anyone would say it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well,
see, that's what's weird.
But
that's what's weird.
But
because for me, it is.
Fiction books should be entertaining.
Yeah.
They should be entertaining. And so in that way, I agree. You know, I read Conkley's books, and Randy, you're practically best friends with him. You guys collaborate on a lot of stuff together. The last book was so much fun to read, Rogue State. I mean, it was harrowing, but, oh, my God, that's at the top of my best of list right now for 2017.
Yeah,
his vision on California, is pretty scary when you think about it, you know. The lack of water.
Well, but it was a fun
and the regulation.
So I'm in the Randy camp with that. I think that, you know, if you're not being entertained or don't learn something when you're reading, then you're not reading the right thing, because
I just
really
mean it is kind of a serious read. Yeah. I had a review recently by someone who he said, my goodness, there's I can't remember the exact wording, but he said something about it being very dark. And, well, it's post-apoc, so it's not a comedy.
Right. And again, for me, I understand.
Funny.
I heard you guys say something earlier. I don't remember who you were chatting with, but asking what you read or what you enjoy. For me, I really only read nonfiction history, and I read post-apocalyptic fiction. That's where I live. So
there's just something about the genre. Yeah.
I really do enjoy it, which brings me right back to your book. So having read the book and now giving it a thumbs up, I do have a reader question.
Sure.
And it's a history question. So
okay.
In 2012, there were some papers that were published that sort of debunked the theory, or at least redirected the theory, about whether or not massive volcanic explosions in history contributed to the Little Ice Age. And in your book...
Okay, so we're talking actually about Surrender the Sun.
Yes,
instead of the pandemic,
sun,
the China pandemic. Okay, no problem.
Right, I didn't clarify.
So, yeah,
sorry.
The sun.
So, yeah. So there's the volcanic. And so in 2012, they kind of pushed
right.
that aside. In
yeah.
your book, you really leaned on the modern minimum.
I
don't remember if you mentioned volcanoes or not, but I know you really leaned on the minimum.
Yeah.
So
I did not. I didn't bring up the volcanic issue with that. I mean, there are so many factors. There's also the electromagnetic fields that contribute to weather changes. There's
right, exactly.
There's several different factors. But yeah,
so,
I lean mostly on the Maunder Minimum, the same situation that happened back in 1645 that caused that mini ice age. Yeah, or that's what the scientists believe today.
Right, exactly. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
I wasn't sure if you had just made the choice or if it just didn't make sense to you, or if you just said, no, I just want to keep it simple and stick to the minimum.
I just thought I would keep it simple and stick to the minimum, and now they're actually calling it not the Maunder Minimum, but the Grand Minimum Cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of new information that's come out. And just to point the fact out that whenever I published this, it wasn't really on the horizon, according to scientists. And this is recent news. This is very recent. So I published, after finding the Maunder Minimum issue, which is the sunspots, the lack of sunspots causing a mini ice age. And after I published, then the science starts rolling in, and still we have like the melting ice caps. So it's, you know, this is the one thing I always come back to. The Earth is 4.5 billion years old. We've only had
mm-hmm.
electricity in our homes for the last 140 years. They've only kept, by far, they've only kept records of sea levels from the earliest record was in like 1589 in Liverpool, England. I, you know, random facts stick in my head. So it was like 1589
yeah.
was the earliest recorded actual observation of sea levels in Liverpool, England. The Earth is a lot older than that. We don't really know, you know, what's going on or what kind of cycles we're dealing with. In the grand scheme of things, anything can happen.
Since we're talking about the Little Ice Age, my favorite tie-in to the Little Ice Age comes at the very end. I'm not even certain that it classifies as part of what's known as the Little Ice Age, but the tie-in comes with Washington crossing the Delaware and the fact that
mm-hmm.
we were having more intense winters in the Northern Hemisphere in that period of
right.
time due
Northern
to
England and
factors,
Northern and here, yeah.
Exactly, due to factors
mm-hmm.
that were tied to the Little Ice Age. So again, I love the whole thing, you know, like the whole story and the
yeah.
way it's tied together and your take on
you.
It was a good read.
Sure. Thank you. And as you look back in history, you do see things like that, how it affected like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, how that affected her novel.
Right.
You know, it was bleak. There was no summer. There was no major harvest. I mean, there was a lot of starvation at the time. Those little things, you know, back in history that become apparent today because of these factors. And I hate to think, you know, what's going to happen if we are actually going through something like this again, because starvation is a very real thing. A lack